if AEW is going to go with this entire voting presidential election motif, can they let us vote on things that actually matter? Such as rules, actual rules and matches on their program. Whether or not Cody should sell for every job guy, underneath guy on the roster and in the greater wrestling community. Or whether or not to ever see the Dark Order again. Mike, this is when you're supposed to say the thing.
Sorry. I was busy registering for my mail-in ballot on all these measures.
Oh, okay.
This and more politically charged talk coming up on the MissSpots podcast.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's amazing!
It's time to play the game. Time to play the game!
All right, we're back with another episode, and we should note we got that cold open down in one take.
And that was unexpected.
Very unexpected.
Moving on, we're professionals.
All right, so we watched the same show this week, purposefully.
That's step in the right direction.
I went back to watching Dynamite. Kevin never stopped watching Dynamite. because there were a few things that I wanted to see from this show. The Moxley Darby Allin title match being won. That's probably about it. There were some other things from this show that we'll get into in a little bit.
Let's throw a monkey wrench, Mike. Okay. You billboarded that the one thing that you wanted to watch on this show was the main event title match. Let's go for it. Let's jump right in.
Okay.
No time at the present.
I thought that this was an entertaining match. There were some...
That's one opinion.
What?
Go ahead.
There's some aspects to this that I feel like crossed over from the last time they fought. Which was before Moxley was the champion, because correct me if I'm wrong, but didn't he catch Darby Allin in a sleeper off of a coffin drop the last time they fought too?
I don't remember. And by the way, commentary was slipping, I think, a lot in this episode. I've always liked the AEW commentary for telling some stories, but I'm noticing a consistent problem in them not telling enough of the story about Matt Cardona coming over from WWE and not telling.
You mean the hottest free agent in all of wrestling?
Sure, absolutely. But not if that was the case, why didn't I hear that from JR? Why didn't I hear that from Shivani? They did not do a good job of talking about the last time these two met, or the fact that they've teamed up before, because they teamed up last week, but they teamed up before to fight the Inner Circle. They didn't tell that story. Now, I'll tell you this, the Mox, and this is all part of it, I think, the Moxley promo earlier in the show was dead on accurate. That was some good stuff. That's the Moxley stuff that I really, really enjoy. You had a wonderful promo. I love where it was done, not in the ring, not standing in front of a camera, sitting on some steps in a backstage area. Perfect place to do a promo like that. The storytelling, the history, the emotion, his history, Darby's history. I was not interested in this match because I didn't think the setup sucked. They teamed up because they had a mutual enemy. And then Darby pointed at Moxley afterwards. And then we got announced a match within 13 seconds of him pointing. So it's almost like Tony Khan was like sitting there next to a microphone or something going, okay, match. We're going to make this match next week. I hated that. So I wasn't interested for this match. This was not something I was into. But then Moxley talked me into being into it. So all that was great. And then the match itself for me was kind of a thing.
Was it because of your now very well-known hatred of AEW spending way too much time on the outside?
So that was part of it, 100%. They can't keep the match in the ring. They can't adhere to any kind of rules or regulations to make a match actually mean something. That was a big part of it. What I don't like is that this match had at least three places where it could have ended conclusively. And by the time they got to the actual conclusive end, I was less interested in the match. It could have ended with the MJF interference easily.
Yeah.
Now, the ref could have seen it. It could have been a fuck finish, which would have been fine for this. They don't have to give us a clean finish here. Darby and Moxley still have some unfinished business. Darby's pissed at MJF for costing him his title shot. Moxley's pissed at MJF. He's got him coming up at the future pay-per-view, but he hit him in the head with a belt and cost him a match. So you could have a little mini thing going with Darby and MJF, but have Darby and Moxley still simmering in the background. That was one finish. They could have done the finish off the sleeper hold, which would have been fine. Moxley's down. He's hurt. He's injured, but he has the presence of mind to catch him in something that still works for a guy selling an injury. That would have been a fine finish. And then they go off and have Darby do a bunch of moves to Moxley. I didn't buy the finish. By the time they got to the actual finish, I wasn't excited for it. I was like, can this match just end now?
I see what you mean there. I liked the finish itself. They could have probably gotten there in a quicker pacing, but I don't know what the correct term maybe for this type of finish is.
Onomatopoeia.
Sure, we'll go with that. So yep. The onomatopoeia finish is a the finish type where the guy, the winner throws everything that they can at them and then throws one last finisher to get it with no comeback from the it's almost like everything but the kitchen sink, or eventually the kitchen sink. I kind of like that. I like that you had him hit the pile driver, get the two count, and then go, all right, now I gotta, for lack of a better term, now I have to kill him. But I
think that would have been fine if they didn't have the sleeper spot in there. It brought everything down to say, this is where we're going. And then I think they pack way too much into every single match. Every match is not supposed to be an epic. Just tell the story.
Mm-hmm.
Just get us from point A to point B. We're not trying to say every single match needs to be, you know, Shawn Michaels and Undertaker at WrestleMania. Just tell the story and get us to where we need to go. The other thing that bothered me big in this match is Moxley took a belt shot from MJF. He took a bunch of big bumps and big moves from Darby Allin. And a few minutes later, he's up basically fresh as a daisy, selling frustration for not being able to beat Darby and not selling a single thing. And even at the end, after he's pinned him, he's not selling exhaustion. He grabs Darby and he's like, you know, whispering sweet nothings into his ear. He's not selling the fact that he's busted wide open. He's bloody. He's beaten. He's taken every best shot from a guy outside the ring that wasn't part of the match with a belt, and the guy inside the ring, and he seems like he's fine. That's why I like the finish where he grabbed the sleeper hold, because that's desperation. That's a veteran knowing what he's doing and a champion defending his crown. To pop up seconds later and be like, ah, I'm fine. I can do anything I want. I'm going to do this. I'm going to do this. I'm going to do this and put this kid down did not tell the story of that match. There's no selling in this whatsoever. It might as well have been, it's different, but equal to Hulk Hogan hulking up. It's just no selling for the sake of now the match is going into this territory, so now we're going to do this. Forget everything that came before. We've stopped this match. We're now having a different match, and this is what this match says we're going to do. And that is a problem with AEW in general. They have three matches in the span of one match pretty much every single time a match goes more than 10 minutes. And that's what I thought this was.
Okay, fair enough.
I'm glad. So were you satisfied with this overall? You were excited to watch it? You were satisfied with the conclusion?
Yeah, I was. I get how... And this has been a thing that I've agreed with you on for the most part, is that not every match on Dynamite needs to be an attempt at stealing the show, and not every match needs to be pay-per-view quality. Like when WWE would overuse that, this is a pay-per-view quality match, then put it on pay-per-view.
Yeah.
But I still appreciate a good match on TV every once in a while, and I like both of these guys. I like their styles and how they kind of commingle. I'm especially big on Darby and his just give it all and just do whatever it takes to try to win, and I thought that it would lead to a fun match, and a fun match I thought I saw.
And the thing is that I liked aspects of it. And I've said before, the more I see of Jon Moxley in AEW, the less I'm interested in Jon Moxley in AEW. He has the ability to cut a great promo like he did in this episode and deliver a decent in-ring performance. He's not a great wrestler, but he's a good talker. And he's got a good personality if they feature that more than his in-ring work. And this was fine. I like Darby Allin, but there were just these little holes in this match that did not allow me to follow that story and get excited about where they're going.
I get that. Were there any positives to this show to you?
So other than the Moxley promo, which I thought was pitch perfect, loved every second of it, MJF did a promo in a ridiculous, idiotic context. The entire idea that he's running for office in some way it's WWE. Debate was basically a KO show. It was a pretense to say some things. Take away the pretense, let them say some things is a better route. But MJF is so good at what he does that he somehow made that garbage, nonsensical segment watchable and good, because he's good. He is better than everybody else on that show when it comes to everything, because he commands the camera, the room, whatever has you. You believe him as a character. And while he's talking about his numbers, you're going, well, this is dumb, but God, I can't stop watching this guy. So that was good, because MJF was on the show and being MJF.
Yeah. It was okay to me, and him just being him made it okay. I definitely thought that this was floating way too much into the WWE realm with it.
It's a stupid concept. It's idiotic. Debate was a stupid concept. and idiotic. But if you look at what Cassidy and Jericho did and their dumb idea, and what MJF did in his trimmed down dumb idea, MJF comes out doing a better job of it.
Both of those, if you took out all of the fluff from either of those segments, you had the points put across.
Exactly my point. You don't need this. You don't need this debate stage. You don't need all this pretense. Just have MJF walk up to somebody, a cameraman, a person interviewing, and give his little promo. Then do his thing and push his agenda for that week. Everything that happened, let's go into the Cassidy and Jericho thing, because I know you enjoyed parts of this. I, guilty pleasure, I'll say, enjoyed a little bit of this, but I do believe this would have been better as just a promo and not anything to do with Eric Bischoff and a quote-unquote debate.
Yeah. I mean, I enjoyed the little answer that Cassidy gave for the global warming climate change thing. It's funny. It's a comedic trope. I enjoyed it. It had nothing to do with anything in it, but, you know, I being a fan of comedy wrestling and stuff like that, like, even though this wasn't comedy wrestling, this was just comedy. Like, I enjoy stuff like that every once in a while. Not going to feel bad about it. But then the very end where he cut a serious promo on Jericho, he goes, how are you going to feel to lose to the guy who puts his hands in his pockets? I was like, shit, like, that's such a fucking great line. And
it's a great line if you concede the fact that there is a wrestler that puts his hands in his pockets. And that's the thing that I have kind of an issue with, is that he's still a joke wrestler that starts his matches off not wrestling and doing a shtick and a gimmick. No, it's if they're setting up for this, I get it. But I want Orange Cassidy to evolve in some point. The guy can sell. I think he has talent, but I he's not believable as a wrestler. This was tilting towards that because he actually cut a wrestling promo, but that's how it was for me.
I feel like I've defended this before, but I feel like some of that shtick is part of his. He uses it against his opponents to lull them into a sense of false, like, stability.
Two things on that.
Okay.
One, commentary has never sold that.
That is
not
true.
Not once. Okay. So we're not being told that at all. Two, if any grown adult person that is a vicious fighting champion from the world of professional wrestling were to take one of these joke kicks to the shin and doesn't punch that guy in the face, get on top of him and beat him to a bloody pulp, then they're an idiot. And if you're telling me that it's just mind games, you've got to do so much work to sell that to me as credible announcers and giving me this from different angles to make it work. They have not done it, and it's just not believable. It's not a believable thing. That's my position. I every time he does it, I cringe and I go, why doesn't this guy just punch this dude in the face until he doesn't move anymore? Because his hands are in his pockets. He's defenseless. He's not here for a fight. He's here to play games and to be jokey and funny and silly. That's my big problem with Orange Cassidy. If he did all this shtick and didn't talk and played and did his little thumbs up, I actually find it charming. But when he got in the ring, took it seriously, we'd be having a different conversation. On my end, at least.
I think this is his character is one that you have to suspend your disbelief on a bit. in order for it to make sense. Like wrestling, you have to do that to a certain extent. Not everything needs to be 100% believable. Because we know that it is a scripted show.
The best angles, the people that actually get you to buy into this, are believable. And a guy his size, doing the things that he does in a wrestling ring, is not believable, and for me, not fun to watch. His demeanor outside the ring, I'll sell you on that. I do like aspects of it. But if this was a person that got in the ring and got serious, I could possibly buy into it. He still is about the same size as me, and I should not be wrestling. And that's a problem, but you could get around that with that roster. But anyway, I did think that this was this came off better than it had any right to come off. Cassidy cut a decent promo, a real promo. The little comedy parts of this didn't hit most of them, but the him being a genius on global warming was, you know, was, like I said, guilty pleasure, kind of funny. But Eric Bischoff being there, pointless. The entire pretense, pointless. They could have done other things for here.
Yeah. Anything else that you liked before we trash the rest of the show?
Oh, no. No, I didn't like anything else.
Okay, so I missed, like, the very, very beginning, like, the first 30 seconds of the show. I had the dog outside, and I walked in, and the 27-person tag match, which makes it a handicap match based on it being an odd number, was already in full effect. Like,
It was a battle royal, basically. No, they just started with all the guys standing around the ring. They didn't do any entrances whatsoever. They were just, it was a 12-person clusterfuck of nonsense. And there were too many people. There were too many stories they were trying to tell. And there were too many spots. And it was too long. It was a garbage match. I knew it would be a garbage match when I started watching it. It was a garbage match. It meant nothing. But at one point, this is the entire thing about AEW coming up with three finishes when they only need one to advance a storyline. When they had one of the members of FTR going to the back and having Adam Page go back there with them, that was an angle. It was a garbage match. It meant nothing. But if it would have furthered that angle, it could have worked. But then they had him come out.
I also don't recall the commentary team making a big deal out of Hangman going back with them.
They mentioned it in passing, and they mentioned the fact that the Bucks didn't have people to tag, and it was just, you know, the Bucks and Omega, and one of the Bucks was down. But there was so much stuff going on that none of it mattered. There were no rules. It was just willy-nilly, go do crazy things. So it was a spot fest that could have turned into a decent wrestling angle to promote the fact that Paige is more interested in FTR than the Elite and his tag team partner. And that would have been okay. Not great. It's still, you don't have to put on a 12-person tag match to do it, and you don't have to present it in this way to do it. But okay, I would have been okay with that. But when Paige comes out, takes a loss, they basically restarted everything and gave us no angle. Nothing going forward. It's just a bunch of shit that happened.
Yeah.
And that blows my mind. If you're going to give us a nothing match that meant that was just a bunch of people doing flips, double teaming when they shouldn't have been, triple, quadruple, centuple teaming. If you're just going to do that and then use it to, you know, progress an angle, dumb, you could do it different ways, but that's fine. But when it doesn't even progress an angle, I'm speechless. I don't know where you're going with this.
The one thing I feel like I've only ever seen in AEW is on these multi-person tag matches. I mean, multi meaning more than two people per team. The tag to tag, like immediate tag out, as if like that's the only way that that person is allowed to come into the ring. It makes sense if you took all of the rules seriously, but the fact that guys come and go out of the ring as they please, under other circumstances, just makes the fact that, okay, I'm coming into the ring, I just got tagged in, now I'm going to tag in this guy, that means he can come in, and now we got 10 seconds to do stuff. It's silly. Like
it's a stupid idea, but if they actually sold that on commentary and said that was part of the rules, I would not be immediately in favor of it because I think it's stupid. But okay, that's part of your rules for your company. Yeah. But they've never said that. No one has ever said that that's okay.
Yeah.
The commentary team doesn't put that over. It is just madness. This was an exhibition. This was, as I think I said last week or the week before, this was a slam dunk competition. I won an NBA game. They give me a slam dunk competition. And this is all that was. And it really did not even progress an angle. It was just stuff that happened. And by the way, they put this on as the first match and then had the nerve to give us two more tag matches throughout the rest of the night. How does any tag match follow this? This is just garbage stuff that's going on.
Yeah.
I don't get it.
So, you know what? This reminds me. I enjoyed the Santana Ortiz and Best Friends match. Their story, as strange as it might be based around a minivan, at least it's coherent. And
okay.
Okay. your face is like, that's one word. It might not be the one that I would use, but that is the word.
I don't think it is. Tell me more nice things about this before I tell you all the things that I hate about it.
I just think that it's simple storytelling. Like, we beat these guys in a match. They fucked up a piece of our property. Now we're mad at them, and let's go further with this. I think it's basic storytelling, but it does involve just one of the wrestler's mom's minivan that makes it a little silly, or a lot silly.
So, mom's minivans aside, the thing that I did not like about this match until I didn't hate the angle later on with the minivan. It's silly. Very silly. But we basically had a 50-50 20-minute tag team match in the middle of Dynamite where I don't really care about either one of these people or any four of these people. I don't care about Santana and Ortiz because they have not been pushed as a serious tag team for a long time. The Inner Circle is a joke. They're a comedy faction for all intent and purposes. And then you have the Best Friends, who I actually really like their intro music, which other people don't like, but I like it. And I don't know who they are. I don't care about them. So I've got a 50-50 match for really no reason with people I can't even remember why. I know that Jericho and Orange Cassidy are feuding, but I still don't know why these two are fighting. I'm not getting the context from the commentary. It just seems like a match to have a match. It goes 50-50 for like 20 minutes. It doesn't need to go that long. They're trying to do this epic pay-per-view kind of stuff that we were just talking about. And when it all finished, I said, well, what did that accomplish? Was anyone more over? No. And then they tried to play off Santana and Ortiz attacking this minivan. That is a good angle if Best Friends beat them in 5 minutes or 7 minutes with a fluke pin after 20 minutes of a 50-50 match. I just don't get it. I don't think it's necessary to have these kind of matches play out every single week. If best friends would have gone in there and dominated or beat them handedly, and we understood why they were fighting, and the commentary gave us that story. I think that that would have been a decent story if they would have given these people, if they would have given us any reason to care about these people for the last several weeks and months. But I just don't feel like they have.
I get what you mean there. I guess I just have a little bit more of a soft spot for both of these teams. So it sits a little easier with me in the context of all of that.
In general, you do have more of a soft spot because you do know more of these people from their work in other companies.
Yeah.
I do not. It's a really interesting position we're in. Overall, AEW has not done the work. They have not done the work to get us to invest in almost any of their talent, except Cody Rhodes, except MJF, in some cases, except Jungle Boy. You could even argue a little bit with Darby Allin and his little vignettes that he does. But they just expect that all these people are stars because they worked somewhere else beforehand. I have no emotional investment to Santana or Ortiz and Best Friends. None. Other than what you showed me on your television. Because I never seen these people before in my life until I watched the first episode of Dynamite. And I never saw the Young Bucks perform in a match or Kenny Omega in a match ever before I saw the first episode of Dynamite. And maybe I'm a bad wrestling fan because of it. But they haven't done the work. They haven't given us the backstory. They haven't told any kind of story for these people. They're just assuming we know who they are, that we're invested, and that we're along for the ride. And because I have no background here, I'm not along for the ride for any of these people. At one point, I was invested in Santana and Ortiz as a heel tag team in a heel faction because I cared about the Inner Circle. When Cody was punching out windows to open doors and Jericho was the champion and they were serious people, I was invested in them. Now they're a comedy quintuple that just plays games and is involved in stupid segments. So why do I care about any of these people? And that's where I fall when I watch a match like this. I have a hard time getting invested. And I don't think I'm the only one.
I don't know. You're definitely not the only one. And there's a number of these people, though, that I was not familiar with. Like, I had heard of Santana and Ortiz. I never watched a single match of theirs in Impact or TNA. I don't remember what iteration it was when they were over there. I never knew who Darby Allin was until I read about a match that he had with Cody at one of the early AEW pay-per-views. There are certain characters that I did not know, and they were able to grab me just in AEW, and sort of in the same way they did to you too, until they kind of got put on the back burner or their characters changed. Like, yeah, Santana and Ortiz started off initially as like unhinged lunatics who were there to just destroy the tag team division. And now Ortiz has become a little bit more of an overblown comedy person character at points.
Yes.
And
it's hurt the entire presentation.
Yeah.
When it comes to that, I have become invested in several people that I've never seen before because they've actually pushed them and given them the opportunity to develop. But AEW has not done the work. It's hard. It takes time and it takes energy and it takes not trying to pop a crowd, which isn't there, by the way.
Yeah.
Right now, it's the perfect time to be doing all this. More vignettes, more character pieces, more angles. Show us who these people are, for crying out loud, and stop trying to book every match like it's a epic 20-minute bout that's supposed to blow off the greatest feud in the world at WrestleMania. And that's what every single match is on AEW TV.
Yeah.
And I don't understand why that has to be. I think we should talk briefly about Big Swole, Redundant, fighting a non-wrestler for what we understand. Jim Ross told us she was a former cheerleader in a wrestling match and at one point being bested. I know there was interference or distraction, but this person started doing wrist locks and suplexes and things like this. I never want to see Big Swole again. She basically got in the ring with someone from the crowd and was bested for 3 minutes. Never want to see her again. Idiotic. Nonsense. Yeah. Why would you do this? Who are you trying to get over? What are you trying to accomplish? What is the goal of the segment? Should that not be written on a whiteboard somewhere in the back office when they're booking this show?
Yeah. Yeah. This, I think, is the one of the biggest problems with AEW is just people being able to hang, people who are looked at, sold as not top of the food chain, and being able to hang with those stars. The tag team match with Cody and Matt Cardona against the schlubs of the Dark Order. We haven't seen John Silver and Alex Reynolds in a match on Dynamite in probably 5 months. And they stood toe-to-toe with these guys, including the one guy who they said the hottest free agent in wrestling. They say that for every new signing, but
they did not stand toe-to-toe. They beat Cody Rhodes into a pulp. They had him as a face in peril. They dominated him. They owned him until he made a hot tag.
Yeah.
To a guy we've never seen before with a name we've never heard who did his exact same shtick he was doing in WWE for the last 5-10 years. He didn't look good. He didn't look better. He didn't look motivated. He just looked like he was doing the same shit he's been doing. I mean, moving on to that thing, what a waste of time. Pure waste of time was that match. We had to have the Dark Order in 2 segments. What did I do to deserve this? What terrible atrocity have I bequeathed upon the world to deserve 2 Dark Order segments in an episode of Dynamite? And to have Cody, who sells for every indie person that walks the door, who will never be a star, never be in anybody, and then now to sell for Sonny Kiss, lower tier roster person, selling 50-50 matches for. This wasn't even 50-50. This was him getting destroyed by nobodies. I do not know who these people's names are.
Yeah.
I know they joined the Dark Order 5 months ago. Don't know their names. Don't care. Never gave me a reason to care. And they're destroying Cody Rhodes for a hot tag for a guy who was a lower mid-card guy in the WWF. WWE, why did I say WWF? And we did not even have the commentary saying, this person was underutilized. This person is a blue chipper that never got his opportunity. We didn't even get that.
No.
And then when he got in the ring, he was just another dude doing stuff. There was no fire. There was not a sense of immediacy that I have to show the world what I can do. It was just, I'm going to do all my Zack Ryder stuff. This was a waste of everyone's time.
Yeah. There's going to be a point to where all of this just becomes way too repetitious.
And not only that, but it didn't even get anyone over. If you're going to make, is it Matt Cardona?
Yeah.
If you're going to put Matt Cardona over as something more than what he apparently is, because I don't know if he has that much to give. Most of the people that are on AEW programming that were once on WWE programming, I would guess Vince McMahon would not want in any way, shape, or form. He's not looking at AEW TV going, man, I wish I still had that guy. Brody Lee? Nope. No interest. They would not sign. They would not touch him with a 10-foot pole. Matt Cardona? Nope. We made a good job. We made a good idea of getting rid of him because he's got nothing to offer. I mean, even up to Moxley, other than a Shield reunion, I don't know how much you want that guy. I like him. I think he has things to offer, but his presentation on AEW doesn't make him a bigger star. But they continue to push these people, Sean Spears, these people like they're something when they're nothing. They're not stars. They're validating every negative thing said by the WWE. And it's not building to anything. Have Matt Cardona come out in a one-on-one match against a member of the Dark Order, maybe, and beat the hell out of him and show some fire and show some immediacy. So show something we didn't see from him, a moveset. His moveset was identical to the WWE. He's still robotic. He still moves like he got molasses in his boots. He's just another guy.
Yeah, I hate sounding super negative on a guy who, like, I know he was talked about for such a long time as like he's so underused, and you know what? Like sometimes there are guys who are definitely underused, but they're not main event guys. Like they could have a very important part in the mid card, the lower mid card, and should be used regularly because they're talented. And I think that Zack Ryder has talent, or Matt Cardona has talent, but he shouldn't be. I'm sorry to say he's not a main eventer, and I hate that he hates a really overly strong word that I probably shouldn't be using, but he shouldn't be in there with Cody. Cody is on a completely different level. And it's just, the same thing would happen even if Heath Slater came in. I think that I can speak for you. We love Heath Slater.
Like, he can talk, he can work, he's got skills.
Yeah, but he's not a main event guy.
But you have to build him. If you're going to bring in Zack Ryder from the WWE, how did he get over? He got over on YouTube.
Yeah.
He got over on his personality. You don't have him run out and make a save and start saying, well, how we're going to get this guy over is wrestling. No, get him over on YouTube. Get him over in promos. Get him over on personality. That's how you get this guy over. And then you mask the fact that he's just an average guy in the ring. And you can be an average guy in the ring and get over. That's the thing that drives me crazy. They do nothing to lean into the actual skill sets of these people. If you had Heath Slater come in, the guy can work. The guy can talk. Let him work and talk and actually say, this guy is a person in the ring that could be special, and let him beat some guys. With Zack Ryder, put him on some vignettes. Put him on some faux YouTube videos that you show on your program that the internet wrestling champion is coming to AEW. Thrusting him into an alliance with Cody, You're trying to tell me that he's special because he's aligned with this guy, but you're just bringing Cody down. You're not bringing Matt Cardona up.
Yeah.
Let him do what he does best. And by the way, with Cody, having him go 50-50 with every single person in the wrestling business is not making them look better. It's making him look worse. Cody is becoming less interesting, less believable, because he's going out there and getting beaten up by jobbers. I don't think we're ever going to see War Horse ever again. And I'd be fine with that. But Cody wrestled a 50-50 match with him last week. I'm excited about Scorpio Sky going with Cody. That's a guy I could see him wrestling a 50-50 match with.
Yeah.
But there's not many of those people on the roster. And there's almost none of them out there on the indies unless you tell us a story. Get us in there. Let them wrestle a match on AEW now. And 4 weeks later, they challenge Cody.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I don't get this.
Me either. I can't remember anything else from the show. I think we
pretty much covered everything that I can think of. There may have been a few things here or there, maybe backstage stuff. I'm not sure. I did watch NXT from the week before, which you watched last week. Mm-hmm. Really happy and ready to talk about. And then I told you that, no, I watched AEW because I'm an idiot. I did make a couple notes.
Okay.
They were both about the women's division and the Mercedes Martinez match. I am ready for Shotzi Blackheart to go away and never be seen again. The tank thing, I can't get over it. Every time I see her struggling with these ridiculous facials to drive this idiotic child's play toy out to the ring, I go, please go away and let's get a serious human being to wrestle in your women's division instead of you. Also, Mercedes Martinez has the worst music I've ever heard for a professional wrestler. It's placeholder music. And she is as green as Shotzi Blackheart's hair. I can't remember seeing her work in a ring before. I like her persona, but my God, she's got a long way to go.
You want to know something?
What?
She's been wrestling for nearly 20 years.
What?
She started training in 2000, and she's been wrestling professionally since 2005, like in promotions. Like she was in Shimmer, like you've heard of Shimmer, right?
I know of Shimmer, yeah.
She was in there for 15 years, 2005, what? Until she signed with WWE. She's worked for Ring of Honor. She's worked all over the world.
Am I wrong? When you watch her matches, does she not look like she can barely knows where's up and where's down?
I didn't necessarily get that.
Okay. Well, I'm misplaced in my frustration here, but I watched this match and said, wow, all persona and no wrestling ability when it came to her. And I hope I'm proven wrong. When I go back and watch NXT from this week, maybe she will have wrestled a match or whatever. But I was very high on this character. And then I saw this match and I went, oh, Shotzi Blackheart is awful as a character. I don't want to see her ever again. But she's a wrestler. And then I saw Mercedes Martinez and I went, oh, she's great as a character, not a wrestler. That was my interpretation of that week of NXT.
Okay. Some little notes that I'm reading here from this week's NXT, not having watched. Right after last week, Dexter Lumis qualifying for the ladder match. He's now out.
What?
He's now out.
Why?
Injury. Or at least that's what they're going with storyline-wise, saying that he sustained an ankle injury at the hands of Timothy Thatcher and will no longer be able to compete in the ladder match. And because of that, William Regal is now creating two matches to fill the last two spots with singles matches with the people who did not get pinned in the triple threat matches. So this is
complicated.
This week, Damian Priest won.
Okay.
So him and Bronson Reed are in the match. And then there's going to be a triple threat match next week with Kushida, Cameron Grimes, and a TBA. And whoever does not get pinned in that match will take on either Ridge Holland, Johnny Gargano, or Finn Balor. They're going to have singles matches, and the winners of those singles matches will be in the ladder match.
That's very complicated.
It is. I felt like I was messing it up trying to explain it.
This might be a symptom of having a bunch of triple threat matches to decide who's going to be in your ladder match. Way too much. Too much, guys.
Yeah.
You know, there were not that many people who were qualified to do this. It looked like they were going with Bronson Reed and with Dexter Lumis. They were going with new people, right, to be in this situation, which I can respect. They're trying to push and get these people experience. But Thatcher should have been in there. Get him in there. But he was pinned. He was submitted during that match, so he's not even in the newfangled rules.
Yeah, the second chance matches.
Lumis is okay. He's not doing a lot for me. He's got a decent look, but do you think he sustained that injury when he did that flip out to the floor and they did that really weird cut? Do you remember watching last week?
Yes.
It looked like they reshot that, didn't it?
It was the where he kind of like was crawling out to the outside. Like that seems to be a kind of thing
he did a full on, I hit the back ropes, I flip out onto the floor and stick the landing next to my two opponents.
Oh, okay.
And it was a really weird camera cut.
I don't recall that.
Okay.
But anyway, I remember
that happened. And then later on, they were talking about him selling the ankle. Like, it almost felt like he probably injured himself there, screwed something up, and now they're having to deal with the fallout because he's not able to compete.
I remember a part in the match where Finn and Thatcher were fighting on the outside, and you can kind of see in the background him, like Lumis. It looked like he just fell out of the ring. But
I don't remember that.
But he crawled underneath the, like, did that kind of crawling thing that he does out of the ring and then just popped up behind them to kind of look menacing and surprise them. But like the camera did catch him coming out of the ring. It was like the camera wasn't supposed to see him come out of the ring, but if you saw it, it just looked like he fell out of the ring. That's what I thought you were referring to, but I feel like I've seen has he done that spot before?
Yeah.
Okay.
His front flip over the top rope into,
he just sticks the landing.
Sticks the landing on the outside, and it's supposed to be really menacing and crazy, but there was a weird camera cut in there where it seems like, oh, they might have reshot this. He might have really screwed himself up here. And now who knows? But so next week, are we going to want to watch NXT? Is that the plan?
Yeah, sure. Let's do that.
Okay, I'm interested in doing that and saying maybe some nice things. The one thing I like about NXT is the thing that I don't think they're doing in AEW. They're telling a story. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's a story that's beating you over the head, that it's like, understand our story. I think the Dijakovic and Keith Lee thing might fall into this, but at least they're trying to tell the story. They're doing more character work over and over again. Get us to invest in these people. And AEW seems to want to go out there and try to put on the best match 5 times a night, and every match has to seal the show. Yeah. That's my, you know, the way that I'm equating these two promotions. And that works really, really well when you're on the independents and you're in front of a new crowd every single night and you've got to just do a bunch of stuff that pops the crowd. But when I'm tuning in every week, I want character development. I want progression in storylines. And I think AEW is falling way short of that if you don't count 1 or 2 or 3 people on the roster.
Mm-hmm.
And NXT does a good job of it.
Yeah.
They've done a great job with Keith Lee. I care so much more about Keith Lee right now than I do about Jon Moxley.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, for sure.
I care about this person. They've given me a person to root for.
Yeah. He's just... that dude is just so insanely likable.
And he actually cut a really, really good promo last week, too.
Yes.
A more fired up, like angry promo,
mm-hmm.
Which I really enjoyed, too.
Yeah. I thought that was great last week. Anything else you want to add about NXT from last week?
No, I just had those couple little notes.
Oh, and Dakota Kai is now the number one contender against Io Shirai.
That's a terrible idea. Because
she beat Rhea Ripley.
Rhea Ripley is the person who should be leading that division. They so stepped in it when they... I know she had some visa issues or travel issues or whatever it was, but she's a star. Dakota Kai is a small person who can wrestle, but Rhea Ripley's a star. Why is she not the face of your women's division? Io Shirai can wrestle too. She's really incredible. I've been on record as saying she's the only person who can perform a Hurricane Rana going forward because she's the only yeah. one that does it correctly and actually believably. But she's still like 5'2". Rhea Ripley looks like she can kick someone's ass.
And yeah.
You're telling me that Dakota Kai won that. I don't get it. I just don't get it. What yeah. are you waiting for? Let the star lead your women's division. Don't give us just people that are replaceable and nondescript. Dakota Kai is kind of nondescript.
Yeah.
Do you disagree with that?
No, I don't. I feel like this is a thing that NXT has done a number of times. It's just they kind of just create a pecking order and they're like, all right, it's now this person's turn to go for the title and they'll do it for a little bit. They might win it. They might not. They just seem to move on, which like is okay to a certain standpoint because it disqualifies the whole like instant rematch stuff, which like we know has always been a problematic thing with WWE that they're finally like trying to get rid of, or at least they say that they are. But it is sometimes weird when a champion is unceremoniously dethroned and then automatically falls to the back again and has to go through all these other little feuds when like maybe they should someone like Rhea who lost that title for a reason that had nothing to do with really just her. It was travel issues. It was Charlotte. Like, she should have been shot back up the ladder pretty quickly and put back into title contention or be the champion. And it's
end of the day, she's a star. She's someone that can drive ratings and that people will actually believe in. You're doing a disservice to your television show to not have her featured or as a champion or both. So it's just bad booking. It's misplaced. It's misplaced confidence in the people, the other people in that division, when Rhea Ripley is not being featured, because she's a badass. I believe her as someone who will come in and dominate the division. And there's very few people right now, certainly not Shotzi Blackheart, if you listen to what I said earlier, that can do that. And by the way, we have to go. But we stopped watching Raw about a month ago or whatever it was. We stopped watching SmackDown a long time ago. This week on Raw, they formed a fight club.
Yeah.
20 years after that was relevant, with, of all people, Shane, the worst working punch in the history of wrestling, McMahon, as a spokesman. They also poisoned a person. They also had Akira Tozawa as a ninja. This is all stuff I just read online in the ups and downs sections of What Culture. Every week I read that Tuesday morning for, I scroll through very quickly, so 2-3 minutes, and I go, man, did we make the best decision of our lives?
Yeah.
This might be, and I haven't seen it, the worst output of professional wrestling in the history of professional wrestling. And Raw is doing it right now as a fix to their ratings woes.
Yeah.
They actually saw an uptick this week because Shane McMahon is a name and he was advertised, or there was rumors he's going to be there. My prediction, 4 weeks from now, the worst ratings they've ever had in their lives, because people will watch this and go, well, this is the worst thing I've ever seen. This was a waste of my time and I didn't even watch it. But from the description, I know how terrible it was. Thank you, Mike, for agreeing to stop watching Raw. Because if you would have said, we have to keep watching this, I would have done it. But you showed mercy on me and on yourself. God bless you, sir.
Yeah, it truly is going to go down as one of the best things I've ever done in my life. And I've done some things that I'm pretty proud of in my life.
You're about to get married, and one of the best things billboarded that you've ever done in your life is stop watching Raw.
Yeah.
Okay. Make sure to work that into your vows.
Oh, I already had them written out, but now I'm going to. Yeah. I guess we can end it on that, or we can just end it on Marty Jannetty. Did you see that?
He murdered someone?
Apparently.
Listen, wrestling's weird. It's just weird. Tons of stuff going on, guys.
Yeah. All right. Anything else you want to say?
No.
All right. Thanks, everyone, once again for joining us.
Please arrest Marty Jannetty.
Someone arrest Marty Jannetty.
There's no statute of limitation on murder.
No.
I did.
Someone must
this.
Have told him wrong.
Like, why talk about murdering this person?
Hey, if you're a cop, you have to tell me you're a cop.
Oh, God. That poor dumb slob.
Hashtag arrest Marty Jannetty. Thanks, everyone, once again for joining us. We see you back here next week, right here on MissSpots.com.
And you'll be a married man.
I will be a married man, a different man, a man who wears a ring. In the meantime, check out our social media. Don't really use it a whole lot right now. That's on me. But thanks once again. We'll see you then. For Kevin, I'm Mike. Good night. Good wrestling.